Hey everybody, this is Catherine Spires. I'm in a good mood today, even though people were impugning my character on Reddit. I actually do have some thoughts relating to what they were saying in this week's newsletter. Though if you already think I'm a bitch, you probably won't like my comments. Anyway, that's at smartmouth.substack.com. And yes, I did just turn my pain into a marketing opportunity. Also, thank you to SmartMouth's newest patron, Jamie Peterson McNeil. I appreciate it very much, Jamie. That can be found at patreon.com/smartmouthpodcast. And now an advertisement for Lobstergram. You should be eating fancy seafood on February 14th. That's Valentine's Day. Lobstergram has been sourcing and delivering the finest lobster and other treats since 1987. Here's how it works. You browse their selection at lobstergram.com and you schedule your delivery date. Remember to set it in time for Valentine's Day. And then your order is shipped to you on the date you request. You can try the Lovestruck dinner for two or Cupid's Crush dinner for two or a, you know, classic seafood tower. Go to lobstergram.com and use the promo code SmartMouthLove to take 20% off of all their products. Some restrictions apply. Now, on to the show. Are you starving?
No, I'm actually okay. I've been running around. I haven't even noticed it.
That's good. Well, you're about to notice it.
I know, because we're even talking about carbonara.
Carbonara is so good. It's not often that an episode makes me hungry because I'm so like inured to it now. But researching this one, I was like, oh, God.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, Nicole Thurman, hi.
Hi.
Thanks so much for joining me on Smart Mouth.
Ooh, thank you for having me.
Tell people what you do.
So I am an actor, comedic actor. I guess you could say comedian, but I always feel like that sounds like stand up. So I never know if I should say that. Anyways, I'm a comedian. I'm a writer. I'm a tweeter. I make like little goofy videos.
You do. They're really funny.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
I like them.
Yeah. And so I've been on some TV shows. I've written some stuff and that's what I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you love spaghetti carbonara.
And I love spaghetti carbonara.
Does it have to be spaghetti for you?
Yeah, because I don't think that I've ever had something that wasn't spaghetti. Something about the noodles all wrapped up with all the like eggy sauce. Yeah. I love. Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely how it's supposed to be presented.
Yeah.
Supposed to.
Yeah.
I think something that we're learning about, at least in food media, is we mustn't say authentic.
Oh.
Because there's almost no such thing is authentic.
Yeah.
You think something's authentic because it's the way your mom made it.
Uh-huh.
You can go to your neighbor's house and find that they make it an entirely different way. So there's not even like in this town, they do it this way.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very, very localized.
And a lot of the towns, isn't it because someone brought that style from another town or something sometimes
totally.
Too?
Totally.
Yeah. So it's like not even the local scene is how it became, you know, it became local over the years.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Everything moves around. The food all moves around because people all move around.
Yeah.
So it's all over the place.
It's interesting. Yeah.
So this episode, this has never happened before, but I got all of my notes from one place. So thank you, Anthony F. Buccini, for presenting a paper at the Oxford Symposium of Food and Cookery 2006, where the topic was eggs in cookery.
Oh.
And his talk was called On Spaghetti alla Carbonara and Related Dishes in Central and Southern Italy.
Oh. That sounds like a tasty talk.
Totally. And it's just like 7 pages of like, here's the deal with carbonara. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to read this.
Uh-huh.
This is good. Literally nothing else informed me except for I know how to cook carbonara. I've lived in Rome. Mm-hmm. And I think it's real good.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. That sounds like pretty good sources.
Yeah, yeah, I thought so.
I don't even know if I know how to cook it. I think I've made it before, but I wouldn't even off the top of my head know how to cook it.
I think it's pretty tricky. I think the eggs, figuring out the eggs
right.
is hard. And there's no one way to do it because some people will be like, put 4 eggs in it. And some people will say, put 3 eggs and 1 yolk in it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of just figuring it out. I think it has a lot to do with your equipment.
Because
a lot of people will get fancy and they'll do the eggs like in a double boiler and then add the pasta. And it's like so many Ooh. Steps that have to be done so quickly.
Yeah.
If you start scrambling those eggs, then you're ruined.
That'd be bad. Yeah. That'd be gross. And what's so funny to me about that, too, is that if it was scrambled eggs with pasta, I think I'd be like kind of grossed out.
Yeah.
But if it's scrambled eggs with rice, it's good. Scrambled eggs with pasta, bad. And then just regular eggs in carbonara, however they're made, I'm into it.
Yeah. I think eggs, I mean, maybe I'm just projecting because I have some like egg textural issues.
Uh-huh.
But I do think it can go from like
the best thing to almost the worst thing really quickly, like drop of a dime.
Yes.
You overcook an egg and
oh yeah, definitely. Oh my God. Have you ever had an egg cooked in a microwave? That's the nastiest thing to me. I cannot do it.
That really upsets me just thinking about it.
I like eggs almost in any iteration, but I cannot do the microwave. It's disgusting to me.
I suppose like Starbucks and McDonald's, not McDonald's actually. No. McDonald's actually cracks eggs. This is a funny thing that my cousins and I have talked about, is that if you're going to get a breakfast sandwich from Starbucks or McDonald's, we think McDonald's is better because they use fresh eggs. Whereas at Starbucks, all the food at a Starbucks is shipped in from some central location.
Oh, yeah.
So it's the egg is actually already cooked and then they just heat up the sandwich at Starbucks.
I guess you could, I could tell the difference. I'd be able to tell that difference, I think.
I think so, too.
Because I've had, I think, breakfast sandwiches at Starbucks, but that's no good.
They have a very specific flavor.
Yeah.
And texture.
Because they're microwave or because they're just reheated.
Yeah, I think so.
That's weird.
Whatever. Yeah. I mean, no one said that Starbucks was gourmet, so.
No, no.
So to define our terms, carbonara, it has to be made with long pasta, almost always, to your point, like, because you've got all that like eggy, cheesy goodness, you want to get it on like sticking to the long pasta.
Yeah.
So it's usually spaghetti, but like if you did it with fettuccine, no one would like sue you. Sometimes you can do it with shorter pasta with holes in it, like penne or rigatoni, something like that, because then it coats, you know, the inside and the outside, and that's considered good. My favorite place in LA to get it for a long time was a place called Osteria La Buca, and they did it with bucatini, which is long pasta long with holes in it. So it's like the best of both worlds.
Yes, that's really, I like bucatini.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
I used to work in an Italian restaurant, so I do know different types of pastas because of that.
Very cool.
I was like, oh, I know bucatini.
That's awesome. Let's see. As we mentioned, the eggs, everyone kind of has a different idea of how many eggs. So that's another thing where no one's like putting down rules about how many it has to be. The cheese in it should be pecorino. But if you're a coward, you can use Parmesan.
What is the Parmesan's just like not as like pungent? What's the word?
Yeah, it's not as pungent. Pecorino comes from sheep's. And Parmesan comes from cows.
So
that's like the difference. Yeah. And yeah, I think pecorino has a much stronger flavor. Some people mix the two into one. That's probably okay too. And then you've got your cured pork, which I think in order of preference, like what's considered good. The first is the guanciale, which is the jowl. And then pancetta, which is the belly. I think prosciutto is okay. And if you don't have any of those fancy Italian meats, you can just use American bacon.
Oh, yeah. That would be good.
It does give it, of course, a smokier flavor.
Yeah.
But it's not bad.
I think that would personally be better than prosciutto. I don't know why, because I think the, like the texture, a little bit more density to it, I think it would be nicer than.
I agree. One thing you're supposed to do is whatever it is, whatever pork part you use, you're supposed to fry it. And you are actually supposed to put oil or butter or lard in the pan. You know how when you normally do bacon, you do it by itself?
Yeah.
They're like, lard up that pan and then add the bacon.
Oh my God. This is why I like this shit so much. I like it.
Okay. It is. That's exactly why.
Now I'm learning. Okay.
And then a ton of black pepper.
Oh yeah.
That's what finishes it off. And you're supposed to use the pasta water, which is salted. So that's any salt you're getting, well, and from the cured pork. But my point being, actually, is that it doesn't have like chili flakes or even onion or garlic. It's very straightforward.
Yeah.
Like you, after you make it, you're like, I didn't put in any aromatics.
Yeah.
Also, you're not supposed to put in white wine or cream, which a lot of people do. And that's considered a cheat, a flavorless cheat. I think I agree.
Why do they do it? Just to make it more saucy or something like that?
Yeah. I think to just like give it ever more richness.
Yeah.
Or maybe they're just confused because it's kind of has the texture of, say, a fettuccine Alfredo.
Right.
Which, that's funny, because that's gnarly, I think. Alfredo. Oof.
Yeah.
No, thank you. Can't deal.
I don't mind an Alfredo, but I get it. Yeah. It is different, though.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah.
It's totally accepted that carbonara is a Roman dish, like, as in the city of Rome, not ancient times. And it has, there's this genre sort of Roman food, Roman pasta dishes. They're all very simple. Usually like the most expensive ingredient is cheese. And it's called cucina povera, like poor food. And I think Rome being the capital city, people think it's like very glitzy, but it's actually not. For most of the people who live there, it's like fairly middle to low income.
Interesting.
So there's a lot of like experimental cooking, like stuff from the pantry. Like, what do we got?
Yeah, let's just throw something in a pot yeah. or whatever. Yeah.
We'll do our best. And then, of course, lots of times those things end up tasting really good.
Yeah.
So there is, I kind of want to go off into the side a little bit for this very common theory about how it was invented, and it's not true. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, I'm actually going to say it's not true. Because mm-hmm. there's always like room for a little bit of leeway with any theory, but I think this one is not true. It's so a lot of people think that it was invented during World War II.
Oh.
And it was specifically something that the American GIs stationed in Italy either asked for or figured out for themselves because they had bacon and egg rations.
Oh.
And it's also, I think, thinking of like soldiers in World War II as being like big strapping young men
yeah.
who want like a farmer's breakfast.
Yep. Yeah, that's what
they had to figure out how to get their bacon and eggs.
Yeah.
But why wouldn't have they just eaten bacon and eggs? Because, well, the eggs were powdered that they got.
Oh, nasty.
You're not making carbonara with powdered eggs. You can't.
Right.
You literally can't. But it's taken as proof the fact that the phrase spaghetti alla carbonara, I guess, didn't show up in print until the late 40s.
I didn't know it was this like new of a food.
Well, it might not be.
Oh, wait, this is a theory that wasn't true. I forgot. Okay, yeah.
It's true that it didn't show up in print, that uh-huh. phrase, spaghetti alla carbonara. Uh-huh. So that does lend credence to the idea that it was like somehow American related.
Uh-huh.
But it wasn't. It was interesting though, because another one of the foods that you said you would want to talk about was Pop-Tarts.
Yeah.
And one of the things with Pop-Tarts, you've got like high-low taste.
I know. That's what I was like. I was like, I'll just go high-low. Exactly. I was going to give you a range of food. And I do love a good Pop-Tart deal.
Well, so that like had, I thought, an interesting military history as well, because the military has airdropped Pop-Tarts over villages in countries that they're trying to win over. Like they did that a lot in Afghanistan.
Oh, they would just, I feel like they would just break apart.
Yeah, you would
but
think.
But they'd still be good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably all the little bits. Yeah. And it was just, that was an interesting thing because I was like, oh my gosh, the military is such a big consumer of Pop-Tarts, that not for themselves, but they're buying a ton.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
And then this is all about the World War II soldiers, which when I looked, there are a lot of stories online that are just like spaghetti carbonara comes from World War II.
Uh-huh.
Just like not
basic,
even.
That's
yeah.
What it is.
Not presenting it as a theory, presenting it as fact. So I think a lot of people do believe it. But the powdered eggs, I think, gives it away.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Like, how would they make it? It wouldn't be that. It would just be pasta, bacon, and then powdered egg on the side.
Reconstituted egg.
That'd be just nasty. Powdered eggs sounds so gross. Have you ever had powdered eggs? I've never had them.
I don't think I have.
I've never had them. I don't think. Unless I have.
I wonder if they can get away with it. Because I know when I was younger, I did a lot more outdoorsy stuff than I do now. And I remember once in eighth grade on a week-long hiking and camping trip. Backpacking, that's the term. One day we ate plain bagels with salsa and a slice of cheese.
Uh-huh.
And I remember thinking it was the best thing I'd ever eaten in my life, and then recreating it at home and being like, what the fuck was I thinking? I was hungry.
Yes.
We were hiking 20 miles a day.
Yeah.
That's depends probably true for soldiers
where
too.
You are. Yeah. What's going on in your brain? Like what you just, like you need something right in that moment. You're like, this is delicious.
Yeah. Oh my God. Salsa.
These are really good. Anybody trying these powdered eggs? I'm just going to eat them out of the bag.
Just lick it.
Just going to lick the powder. Ugh. That's disgusting.
So there's another theory that the dish was named after the Carbonari, which was a secret society.
Ooh, like akin the Illuminati?
Yeah. Like the Freemasons?
Oh.
Yeah.
Are those the ones that have the big temples, Freemasons?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, and there's like secret rituals and stuff like that. They were big in Italy in the early 1800s. Why did people think it was somehow associated with the pasta dish? No reason.
Just because the name?
Yeah.
They're just like, yeah. Well, I mean, where else would the name come from, though? That's kind of interesting.
Well, I could tell you.
Oh, my goodness. This is so educational.
Okay. So what if, like, this pasta dish has always been around. It was just that it was called something else.
Mm-hmm. That seems plausible.
Right? Because branding is something that only became popular in like the 1900s when people were thinking about like unified names and feeding the greater world, not just like your immediate family or the people in your town or something. So with that in mind, there are a group of Roman style dishes that I mentioned before that kind of make up the basis of cucina povera. These all spaghetti dishes.
Okay.
And they kind of are all things that have a lot of overlap. Like there's carrettiera. This is the one that I think sounds the fanciest of them because it has mushrooms and canned tuna. Ugh. And I'm telling you, those are the fanciest ingredients in any of these pastas.
But isn't Italian tuna is really good though?
Very good, but yeah. I think not expensive.
Right. So I'm probably still poor. Povera.
Yeah.
Povera,
yeah.
How you say it?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's good. It's better than American, like what I would think of what is it, Sunkist?
Right.
Yeah.
I think that that's true. And it's oil packed as well. So it's like a different flavor.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
You wouldn't mix oil packed tuna with mayonnaise to make a sandwich.
Right, right.
It's a different thing. Yeah, and specifically porcini mushrooms. Just that. And sometimes it has diced tomatoes. Sometimes it doesn't. And then some grated cheese. I know. It sounds kind of gross, but I'm also willing to give it a shot because the Italian dishes made with tuna that sound disgusting that I've had every single time have been like, yum.
Okay. You know what I was just thinking? I hope I'm not sidetracking too much, but was something that I like really like to make is mac and cheese with tuna in it.
That's
so it's not that weird.
Tuna helper.
Yeah. So it's like, I guess that's true. Oh my God. And I always love tuna helper. So it's not that weird. Because at first when you said tuna in pasta, I thought that sounded horrible.
Yeah, I know. But I think it's actually not that really weird. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I lived in Italy, my quote unquote host mother, I lived in a house for a couple of days and they were weird people. But on my first night there, she made food and it was these slices of eggplant with like a tomato tuna sauce over it. And it was actually good.
That doesn't sound that bad. I could get with that.
Yeah. But she thought that I wouldn't like it. So they were like, no, eat the spaghetti with canned red sauce. And I was like, no.
Like, you're an American. You don't like this. And you're like, no, but my palate. I have a good palate.
Exactly. You don't know me.
You don't know me.
Let's see. There's spaghetti alla gricia, which is made with the fried guanciale or pancetta. And then you add some dried chili pepper and sometimes onion. And then just cheese and black pepper. There's amatriciana, which is almost the exact same, but you can add a splash of white wine if you're feeling luxe. So the overlap that carbonara has with all of those is the pork. That's pretty much, that's thematic. And the pork isn't just served by itself. You've fried it in lard. And you've got the pecorino, the strong cheese, and then a lot of black pepper. Almost all of these dishes are made without aromatics. So without your garlic and your onions.
Yeah, that's really
interesting. There's one where they're like, do a little onion if you want.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a symbol of the style of cooking that was in this whole, you know, all over the town. And then you start to think like, you're like, oh, mushrooms are expensive. Except that sort of in Roman culture, and we're talking about like the early 1900s, they weren't buying mushrooms at the store. They were going out into the woods and gathering their own. So this is another thing where you're like, oh, at first you think it's fancy, but right. It's really not.
Right.
And within these dishes, if you want to substitute like canned tomatoes for fresh tomatoes, that's not looked down upon. So what we're looking at is all pantry items.
Yeah.
Nothing that you have to make a special trip for. Nothing that's expensive.
Yeah.
It's all like stuff you've got on hand.
There. Yeah. I think that's probably why I like it too. That's kind of how I cook.
Yes.
Like I really legitimately will just be like, what do I have? And just kind of throw it into a skillet and like cook it all together. Like,
yeah,
whatever.
When I'm not being a low carb weirdo, I usually just make pasta at home.
Yeah.
And I have found that just putting like cheese, maybe egg, and then like a bunch of herbs and spices is way better than you would think.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not like you can make a basic pasta really good. Yeah.
Especially if you add a lot of fennel seeds because a lot of Italian sausages have fennel in them. And I think it tricks the brain into being like, I'm eating so many sausages.
That sounds right. Oh my God. These sausages are so good.
Valentine's Day is coming up, and whether you're partnered or single or in a polycule, I think that's how it's pronounced, you should be eating some fancy seafood on February 14th because roses, chocolates, that's played out. And honestly, restaurants are at their worst on V-Day. So instead, treat your loved ones to a more special Valentine's Day dining experience. Lobstergram, which has been sourcing and delivering the finest lobster and other treats since 1987, guarantees 100% happiness. Here's how it works. Browse the online selection of seafood at lobstergram.com. Schedule your delivery date and remember to set it in time for Valentine's Day. And then your order, along with your Lobstergram cooking guide, is priority shipped at the date you requested. Try the Lovestruck dinner for two, or the Cupid's Crush dinner for two, or just a bunch of Maine lobster tails or a seafood tower. Go to lobstergram.com and use the promo code SMARTMOUTHLOVE to take 20% off all products. Some restrictions apply. Now, back to the show. So the only difference really that the carbonara has from those dishes is the eggs. But this guy, Buccini, made the point that like in olden times, most middle class to lower class households had a couple chickens hanging out.
So that's easy. They just get the chicken and knock one out.
I thought that was all very interesting.
That is. Because I also wouldn't think of it as poor food, I guess you could say, but like it totally makes sense.
Yeah, because when it's in front of you and when you're eating it, you're like, this is the richest thing I've ever had in my life.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the food of kings.
Yeah, yeah. It feels decadent. It feels really decadent.
So decadent.
But when you break it down, it's so basic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And another one of those things that's like really, if it's a farmer's meal, it's very reasonable.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, they should eat a lot of eggs and bacon.
Yeah. Go for it. Y'all got it right there. Just eat it.
And hella spaghetti.
Yeah. You got hella spaghetti. Come on.
The difference between dried and fresh pastas in America is often presented as not fancy or fancy, but it's actually just different styles of pasta that are meant to be either fresh or dried. Oh, and another thing that the guy who presented this talk said about the cucina povera is that like we think of it in our minds as kind of the Mediterranean diet. We're like, oh, fish and vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
Eggs and bacon would be expensive, except for Rome is landlocked.
Yeah.
So they're not eating fish, really. They have some cod dishes, but it's salted cod. It's not fresh fish.
Yeah.
And so things like olive oil were fancy.
Uh-huh.
That's why they were cooking their pork in pork.
Yeah. That's really funny, too.
And also their diet was a lot starchier than we think of in our imagination about Italian food. Cornbread. Cornbread is hella Italian. Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
They're super into corn. Actually, the episode that aired last week, we talked about how when corn first came to Italy, everyone got sick because they weren't doing the nixtamalization process that the indigenous peoples of Central America figured out. And so they didn't have the right nutrients in it. They were only eating corn and none of the nutrients were staying in their bodies.
I mean, I still don't even think of corn as having that many nutrients, though.
You got to do stuff to it.
Yeah, you got to like really, you got to do some, it's got to be processed.
Yeah.
Got to go through some steps.
And then that's another way that you can tell that spaghetti alla carbonara doesn't have cream because that's expensive.
Yeah. Could they get it from the farm?
Yes, presumably.
But they don't need it. That's doing too much.
I wonder what like, what's most farmed in Italy? I actually don't know.
I don't either.
Because I know that in Tuscany, it's famous for like its enormous steaks, but clearly that's not an everyday food.
Right.
And Rome is not in Tuscany.
Right.
I think Tuscany is assumed to be a much wealthier place.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think there's as many cows in Lazio, which is where Rome is.
Interesting.
Maybe in the Vatican.
Yeah, because it's funny when you say cow because I'm like thinking even corn. I'm like, I didn't know corn was even in Italy. Like, I didn't even know they farmed it there.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, I can give you a little bit of information why we don't think of it that way. It's because most of the Italians who immigrated to the U.S. in like the 1890s-ish, they were all from southern Italy.
Uh-huh.
And the food that they ate is the food that we think of as Italian food. We don't differentiate between southern and northern.
Right.
So we're like, oh, it's all tomato-y.
Right.
But actually in Italy, when you go further north, you're eating your polenta and your potatoes.
Oh, wow.
It's way heavier.
Yeah. Did not know that. Learning.
Yeah. Italy wasn't unified until very recently.
Uh-huh.
And I think still some people who live in various regions consider themselves of that region more than they consider themselves Italy.
Yeah.
So for such a small place, it's actually, I don't want to say diverse.
Yeah.
Because that seems like not exactly what I mean.
Right.
Within European culture, it's pretty uniform.
Uh-huh.
But they don't think of themselves as like, Italy is way smaller than America, and we're all like, we're Americans.
Yeah.
But it would be like saying, like, I'm a Montanan.
Right. And you'd be like, that's not who I am.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm different than that. Yeah. I remember I went to Italy when I was 16 and we went to different parts and it was, yeah, every area we went to felt so different. So that makes sense.
Yeah. Because
it's just like the vibe of the people, the, I don't know, feels like the climate, like everything just seems different in different regions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was reading something about how Sicily really traditionally doesn't do pasta because they do North African food. As early as 1839, there's this dish that comes up in Italian cookbooks that's called cacio e uova, which means cheese and eggs. Mm-hmm. So this whole episode is to say spaghetti alla carbonara has always existed.
Yeah.
It just didn't have that name.
Uh-huh.
It's like eggs and cheese.
Eggs and cheese with pasta.
Yeah.
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 Not like, just like scrambled eggs with cheese on
top. No. I'm sure that's an option as well. But yeah, that's like it's pasta cacio e uova.
Uh-huh.
And it's just like eggs and grated cheese. And of course, like eventually someone would be like, oh, a little pork. I've got a little extra. It does specify that the cacio e uova is beaten eggs.
Oh, okay.
With the cheese mixed in. So this is another thing that it would upset Romans is that it mostly comes out of Neapolitan cookbooks and people call it a Neapolitan dish.
Oh, but they're like, no, it's Roman.
Yeah. This is okay. I've been doing this podcast for 3 years and I'm afraid I've been telling the same 5 stories over and over again. But when I lived in Rome, there was that first awful family I lived with and then lived with another family. And they told me that their American exchange student they'd had before me had hung her laundry to dry off the balcony.
Mm-hmm.
And they got a note on their front door from their downstairs neighbor that said, non siamo a Napoli, which is we are not in Naples.
Ooh! Matilda looking at me like, why are you screaming? But it's because we're not in Naples, honey.
Yeah.
This is Rome.
We are elegant.
Wow.
And it's again with the projection because people who actually live in like actual northern Italy consider Rome to be southern Italy.
Yeah.
So everyone's just like freaking out about where they're from and who their people are.
What is the actual like hoity-toityest region in Italy?
I think it's like the Milan area.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. And Torino actually is incredibly wealthy, but also very boring.
Yeah.
It's like a lot of industry and car making.
Uh-huh.
Venice used to be nice, but that's clearly not. I mean, Venice won't exist in 5 years.
Really? Is it just like because it's going to be flooding?
Yeah.
It's going to be like it's underwater?
It's like drowning.
Wow. That's crazy.
There's all these pictures of the people walking in like waist deep water.
And they're trying to like shovel it out.
Yeah.
And put it into more water. Yeah. Oh my God.
Shovel the ocean into the ocean.
It'll work. We'll be good.
Yeah.
Wow. I haven't been since I was 16, so I don't remember it being like that, but I've seen the video now. I remember that. Yeah.
I mean, I think it's really recent, right? It's
crazy. Yeah.
Like it always had its flooded season where people would wear boots.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's like, no, you're going to kayak to work.
That's crazy. That's scary.
Really upsetting and scary.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And then Australia's on fire and
Yeah, that's really wild to me. I mean, all of it's been wild, but it's just like what is happening? And then yesterday it was like 70 degrees in New York in January, mm-hmm. and they got their first snow like a week ago in DC. Like what's happening?
Oh, and then you add on to that the White House sending out Photoshop pictures of snow when it was 53 degrees out.
I couldn't believe I posted something on Twitter about that because I just thought it was hilarious. I'm like, what are they doing? Like, what is happening?
Why was this lie important?
Why was it? That's like me with my ex, though. Like, why was this lie important? This lie wasn't even necessary. Like, there's been so many lies and some of them I get because you need to lie. But like, why lie about, you know, did you go to the store today? It's like the same thing with like the White House. Like, why are you lying about it's snowing? Like, yeah. It just didn't snow today. So why would you say that?
It's because they're so used to lying that they just like kept tweeting lies. And they're like, wait, and they're the fuck did I say it was snowing?
That. We could have just said that was a cool filter on top of the picture. Why do we do that? Like, they don't fucking know what they're doing. They're just like, whatever.
Oh my God. Just sheer panic.
It's just hard to stop lying.
I mean, apparently.
You just got to be honest with yourself so you can be honest with other people. White House.
Yeah. Donald Trump.
And ex-boyfriend. Yeah. It's not that hard. Go to therapy, Donald Trump. Should be required. It should be required.
Oh my God. That's such a good idea. Yeah. President should have to go to therapy.
I mean, a therapist can't be a therapist without going to therapy because they have to deal with so much like stress or whatever. So it's like, how are you going to make a president able to control the world or whatever and doesn't go to therapy to like talk it out?
I mean, that's such a good point.
How are you going to have give him access to nuclear codes, but like not give him a person to talk to every week?
Honestly, they should have a team of therapists.
Truly, it's wild. I mean, it's really wild. Like they just anybody could be doing it.
I mean, we're all in therapy.
Yeah.
Why can't he?
We're all in therapy. I feel like everybody should be in therapy and hopefully everybody could be in therapy, find access right. to it, whatever. Like yes. everybody deserves to be in therapy because we all need it. But yeah, for some reason, we just like are letting the president get away with not going to therapy.
Oh my God. I think that's such a good point.
Every president, why not? But particularly this one, he's yeah. a lunatic. So yeah.
Well, and also because maybe if there were a medical professional who was like, no, we gotta lock him up.
Yeah. It's actually really true. It'd be like, actually, he's not fit to be president. So we need to lock his ass up.
Yeah.
I would love that.
Now, one time I got an email with a man chastising me for making fun of Jared Kushner on this show.
Oh, geez.
But I think by this point I've weeded out all the Trump supporters. Good. I don't think there's any also, Trump supporters listening to this.
It's punching up. If you were like making fun of like someone who had no money, was less fortunate, wasn't in a position of power, didn't have reason to be made fun of. Sure. But it's like these are people in power. They're on a public platform. We have access. We can do whatever we want. They're public servants. So it's like we're gonna make fun of them. And they're horrible. They're evil and they're rich. So it's like they're fine. He's fine.
Well, that's part of the cult too, to be like, don't make fun of Jared Kushner.
Yeah.
Why?
He's like, why? What are you
kidding? Are you friends?
Is Jared, that's the thing too, is when people are like standing celebrities so freaking hard that they're bullying other people on the internet. I'm like, you do understand if that person saw you in public, they would not even want to talk to you. They'd probably think you were a freak.
Yes.
Like they probably wouldn't even be into you. Jared Kushner would probably be a dick to you. So sir, don't defend him. You don't need it.
Exactly. Oh my God. Well, now I'm all worked up.
I know. And now I got you off track. I feel like went from talking about eggs to talking about the White House. I don't know.
One's better than the other.
Right.
So anyway, do you have a favorite place for carbonara?
No, you know what? I need to really explore restaurants in LA more. I feel like I somehow have gotten out, like that's a really huge thing for me is like finding new restaurants, eating great food. And like I've gotten really lazy about it the past couple of years. I do remember going to Kettle Black one time and having really great Italian food. But I feel like that's kind of like Kettle Black is that place on Sunset. It's like kind of hip and cool, but it was good.
Yeah, I've had a pizza there that I actually really enjoyed. I think that place might have closed.
Oh, did it? Oh,
it's either that or Sawyer. They're the same
Sawyer's
owner.
Still open, so Kettle Black probably closed. I haven't been because I've been gone for like a year. So then I just came back and don't know what anything is anymore. But yeah.
Well, listeners who know about Italian restaurants in Los Angeles, will you please tweet at Nicole?
Yeah.
Give her some tips and recommendations and CC me because I'm nosy and want to know what people are saying.
Yeah.
What is your Twitter?
Oh, it's at Nicole Thurman and I have two C's in my first name. So it's NicoleThurman.
And on Instagram?
On Instagram, I am at Nicole, NICCOLE underscore DOT underscore T. It's a terrible.
You had to make it complicated, huh?
I did it before and now I can't change it because I'm verified and so I can't change it. And it was a bad decision. You know, it's hard. When I go on podcasts, I'm always like, okay, this is how it's going to take me a second to explain the name. Yeah, it's a pain in the butt.
Oh, well. Yeah, everyone should go follow Nicole because her videos are really funny.
Yeah, follow me.
Add a little levity to your day.
Yeah, please. We have fun over there on Twitter. Unlike most of Twitter. We have fun.
Awesome, Nicole. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Como bella c'è la luna, brilla strette, strette come butto, belle faste già. Sotto cielo di Roma. Down each avenue, via street or strada, you can see them disappearing two by two on an evening in Roma. Do they take him for espresso? Yeah, I guess so. On each lover's arm, a girl I wish I knew on an evening in Roma. Though there's grinning.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening. As I mentioned in the episode, I only used one source. It's called On Spaghetti alla Carbonara and Related Dishes in Central and Southern Italy. It's a talk that he gave, he being Anthony F. Buccini. You can find it in this collection called Eggs in Cookery, Proceedings of the Oxford Symposium of Food and Cookery, 2006. A link to that is in both the show notes and on smartmouthpodcast.com. And now, ad time for Lobstergram, because you should be eating some fancy seafood on February 14th, aka Valentine's Day. Lobstergram has been sourcing and delivering the finest lobster and other treats since 1987. Here's how you do it. You browse everything they've got at lobstergram.com, schedule your delivery date, remembering to set it in time for Valentine's Day, and then your order is shipped on the date you request. You could try the Love Struck Dinner for Two, or Cupid's Crush Dinner for Two, or a Seafood Tower even, or anything else, really. Go to lobstergram.com and use the promo code SMARTMOUTHLOVE to take 20% off of all products. Some restrictions do apply. SmartMouth is a production of Table Cakes, a woman-owned Los Angeles-based podcast company. SmartMouth is hosted and produced by moi, Catherine Spires, and engineered by Mika Grimm. You can check out all of our shows at tablecakes.com. A Table Cakes production.